Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Good evening and welcome to Encouragementology. Thanks so much for tuning in tonight. We are taking it back to the basics, the realness of retro. I'm really excited to do this show. I love to revisit and be nostalgic. Don't you? Things are a-changin'. But what happened to the good old days? Are you questioning that more and more? There is no doubt with all the emerging technology and modern-day conveniences, life hasn't gotten a little easier, but true to the old adage, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Some things should have been left alone. Some things we might see as inconvenient might have been critical to our social and emotional well-being and maybe paramount to our development as a society. So let's reminisce a little bit, go way back, as I like to say, and revisit what might need reviving. So kick off your shoes, get comfy. This should be fun. So what is way back for you? Think about a time when everything felt right, easy, joyful. It may be your youth, since responsibilities could have been few, or it could have been when you were in your heyday, feeling on top of the world. It might have been a time you just heard about, a simpler time, when connections were real and people made an effort. They were taken at their word and choices were few, but the quality was high. Wherever your mind transport you, let's talk about then. My dad was a first generation, or is a first generation German, who was born to immigrant parents that settled in Seattle, Washington. His dad passed away when he was 11, but he remembers a man who was very proud to be in America. He took pride in his work and cherished his relationships. He was a gas jockey, and he took his job very seriously. My dad still has his uniform. It was always neatly pressed and pristine, and he felt honored putting it on every day. He wasn't trying to shorten his day or work from home. He wasn't bitter about management and not owning his own time. He wasn't irritated at having his day scheduled for him or having to get up early. He was appreciative of a steady job, a paycheck, the opportunity to be part of a team, the respect earned, and the responsibility given. When my dad landed in Southern Illinois for a job at the university, he settled in Cobden, a small rural farm town where everyone knew everyone. He made connections quickly because he knew he had to establish some roots. He needed to be part of the community. You see, he bought a place south of town, a big old farmhouse that needed some repair. He had a wife and an infant son and only knew one other person in town. I remember him telling me this story and reminding me that you are only as good as your word. Never forget that. This was before credit cards. And as I said, he was new in town and he only had one connection. Back then, you bought things on credit, but that was determined by your character and if they felt you were trustworthy. He always paid on time, and before long, he was in good standing with this close-knit community. He wasn't judged based on his credit score. He didn't have Amazon, and he wasn't a Prime member. He wasn't researching companies' legitimacy and reading one-star reviews to see if they were just hypercritical or helpful. He was meeting people, developing relationships, and earning trust. He was making commitments and seeing them through. That shaped his character and gave him an admirable reputation. Remember when a handshake was honored? Remember when neighbors looked out for each other's children? The grocer would keep a tab if you were short? Remember when work ethic was rewarded and family farms were in abundance? Remember when schools were open with the Pledge of Allegiance and a prayer? Remember when strong character values were taught. Please and thank you were expected. The cost of living was low. Remember when legal, political, and medical ethics were not perfect, but more of the normal, and churches and civic groups looked after the poor. You know, I bring these two stories up to shine a light on the fact that there are important life lessons we're meant to learn on this journey. Sometimes the journey means meandering, getting stuck in the ruts, getting towed out of the mud, coasting down the highway, taking a side route that might be a little bit rocky, finding a detour to avoid danger ahead, or even setting it on cruise control, and everything in between. Taking the luge of life, not passing go, not collecting $200, is no way to live. Every obstacle, challenge, loss, and win is a chance to learn and grow. When we eventually make life so easy, where's the lesson? And where is the growth? I like the way Tim Wu, who's a professor at Columbia Law School and a contributing opinion writer for the New York Times, describes convenience and its power over us. Convenience is the most underestimated and least understood force in the world today. In the developed nations of the 21st century, convenience, that is, more efficient and easier ways of doing personal tasks, has emerged as perhaps the most powerful force shaping our individual lives and our economies. Convenience decides everything. Convenience seems to make our decisions for us, trumping what we like to imagine are our true preferences, like I prefer my coffee brewed on my own. But Starbucks, instant coffee is so convenient. I hardly ever do what I prefer. Easy is better. Easiest is the best. Convenience has the ability to make other options unthinkable. Once you've used a washing machine, laundering clothes by hand seems irrational, even if it might be cheaper. After you've experienced streaming television, waiting to see a show at a prescribed hour seems silly, even a little undignified. To resist convenience, not to own a cell phone or not to use Google, has come to require a special kind of dedication. With its promise to smooth, effortless efficiency, it threatens to erase the sort of struggle and challenges that help give meaning to life. Created to free us, it can become a constraint on what we're willing to do, and thus, in a subtle way, it can enslave us. Have you ever thought about it that way? It's conditioning, right? Conditioning to need immediate and easy gratification. It would be perverse to embrace inconvenience as a general rule. But when we let convenience decide everything, we surrender too much. Being a person is only partly about having and exercising choices. It's also about how we face up to the situations that are thrust upon us, about overcoming worthy challenges and finishing difficult tasks, the struggles that help make us who we are. What happens to human experience when so many obstacles and impediments and requirements are removed? Difficulty, it's part of the human experience. Convenience is all destination and no journey. But climbing a mountain is different from taking the tram to the top, even if you end up at the same place. We are becoming people who care mainly or only about the outcomes. We are at risk of making most of our life experiences a series of trolley rides. An unwelcome consequence of living in the world where everything is easy is that the only skill that matters is the ability to multitask. At the extreme, we don't actually do anything. We only arrange what will be done, which is a flimsy basis for life. We need to consciously embrace the inconvenient. Not always, but more of the time. As I always say, healthy balance. Nowadays, individuality has come to reside in making at least some inconvenient choices. You need not churn your own butter. I'm not talking about going that far or hunt your own meat. But if you want to be someone, you cannot allow convenience to be the value that transcends all others. Struggle is not always a problem. Sometimes struggle is a solution. It can be the solution to the question of who you are. You know, I have done web design for a long time. I've worked in web design since probably 2002. And I remember reading a book, just a small book, and anybody out there that has done web design will know what I'm talking about. But it's called Don't Make Me Think. Small little book. It's talking about where to put buttons, what color they should be, what should be written on them, so nobody has to think. Now that sounds cool, right? Yeah, why not make it as easy as possible? But what happens when we don't have to think? Let's jump ahead decades, because we're already kind of there. You know, I said it was 2002. What in the world are we going to do when we don't have to think? What if everything shut off and we didn't have technology? Where's our problem-solving skills? Kind of scary when you think about it that way. Makes you want to get up and turn the television set, right? Remember when the remote came out? Oh, man, that's so great. I don't even have to get up. Before that, you have to walk up every time, and somebody has to stand next to the television until you find something you want to look at. But, of course, there was only a couple channels, so it really didn't take that long. Today, it would just seem ridiculous that you would have to do that. You know, some of those activities take time, but they also give us back time. They expose us to the risk of frustration and failure, but they can also teach us something about the world and our place in it. That's important. We don't want to lose that. We don't want to lose our place in it. People born in the 1800s bore witness to more social and technological change than any generation in history. Imagine coming into America where phones, electricity, automobiles, airplanes, TV, oil, civil rights, and Social Security were largely non-existent, and leaving it with these things becoming commonplace. That's a lot of change. But the next generation of Americans might experience even greater upheaval. It's likely that children won't be educated the way they have been taught for centuries. There really is no longer a need to memorize facts and dates, right? All of these can be Googled. They may never have to lug a heavy backpack around school because electronic readers may soon replace textbooks. They already have. I remember working with a school district that had a fully digital school. There were no books in the library. Everything was digital. There's also a good chance they will never know the dependence on oil as a renewable energy as technology continues to flourish. That's going to be a lot of change. If we could predict that, you know, technology just sort of taking over and dictating what happens next. You know, I thought about this. Why do I need to consume more information than I used to consume? Why? At this age, why do I need more information? Have you ever questioned that? Is all this information I have at my fingertips making me smarter? Is that happening? Well, neuroscientist Daniel Levitin says, no, it's not. Our brains are busier than ever before. We're assaulted with facts, pseudo-facts, jibber-jabber, and rumor all posing as information. Trying to figure out what you need to know and what you can ignore is exhausting. At the same time, we're all doing more. 30 years ago, travel agents made our airline reservations, our rail reservations, salespeople helped us find what we were looking for in shops, and professional typists or secretaries help busy people with all their correspondence. Now we do most of those things ourselves. We're doing the job of 10 different people while still trying to keep up with our lives, our children, our parents, our friends, our careers, our hobbies, our favorite TV shows. It's too much. Our smartphones have become Swiss Army knife-like applications, right? They include a dictionary, a calculator, a web browser, email, Game Boy, appointment calendar, voice recorder, guitar tuner, weather forecaster, GPS, texter, tweeter, Facebook updater. Oh, and a flashlight. They're more powerful and they do more things than the most advanced computer at IBM. 30 years ago, of course. And we use them all the time. Part of the 21st century mania for cramming everything we do in every single spare moment of downtime. Do you do that? We text while we're walking across the street. We catch up on email while we're in line. We're having lunch with our friends while checking to see what our other friends are doing. At the kitchen counter, cozy and secure, in our own little domicile, we're writing our shopping list on our smartphones while we're listening to some sort of podcast on urban bookkeeping. Where is the downtime? What happens to our attention spans? Why can't we just sit still? No wonder we feel so exhausted, overwhelmed, and frankly sick. We are overloading ourselves trying to consume everything in front of us. Information is everywhere. And most of the time, we're not fully aware of how hard it's working to grab our attention. We've become used to this, and we just accept it as normal. Now, I want you to think about Ma and Pa. Ma and Pa. This is a Little House on the Prairie reference, if you didn't catch that. They are going to town to see what's new at the mercantile. They didn't wake up, and they didn't check their phone or surf social media to see what's new. They didn't flip on the tube while they were having coffee or turn on the local commercial radio station. They loaded the kids in the wagon, had a nice ride into town. They didn't see billboards advertising the latest and greatest littering the roadside. They pulled up to the store. The store. They didn't have endless options all vying for their attention and their money. Now, when they went in there, there were the advertisements and the circulars. When the choice to shop had already been made, oh, those were the days, right? Today, ads are everywhere. It's difficult to look in any direction and not be bombarded. How are you supposed to make sense of all this information? Our brains are not wired to multitask well. When people think they're multitasking, they're actually just switching from one task to another very rapidly. And every time they do, there's a cognitive cost in doing so. So we're not actually keeping a lot of balls in the air like a juggler. We're more like a bad amateur plate spinner, frantically switching from one task to the other, ignoring one that is not right in front of us, but worried it will come crashing down at any minute. Even though we think we're getting a lot done, ironically, multitasking makes us less efficient. I was reading an article today while I was, sort of thinking about the show tonight. I wish I could have taken a screenshot. If we weren't on the radio, you could actually see it. But I had a banner ad at the top that was moving, right? Over the name of the website. So it was moving. I had two banner ads from some sort of office supply place. See, I'm not going to give them that shout out. And they were on the left and right. Same banner ad, left and right. And they had this fall sale. So they had all of these leaves that were continuously falling through their ad. Then I had a bottom ad that continued to try to overstep what I was reading. So I was constantly having to click it. Well, when I clicked it to shut it off, it switched to another one. All moving. Now, what is that doing to our brains? How am I supposed to read that article with all of that jumping around? You know, back in the day, if the phone rang and we were busy, we either didn't answer or we just turned the ringer off. When all phones were wired up to the wall, there was no expectation of being able to reach us at any time. You know, you might have gone out for a walk or been between places, not even home yet. And so if someone couldn't reach you, or you just didn't feel like being reached, it was considered normal. Now more people have mobile phones than they have toilets. This has created this expectation that you should be able to reach someone when it's convenient for you, regardless of whether it's convenient for them. This expectation is so ingrained that people in meetings routinely answer their mobile phone to say, "I'm sorry, I can't talk now, I'm in a meeting." Just a decade or two ago, those same people would have let a landline on their desk go unanswered during a meeting. What happened to these expectations? I encounter it every day. I'll call someone and they'll answer, "Hey, I can't talk right now, I'm in a meeting." And I'm thinking, why did you answer the phone? Why did you even pick it up? Now I feel rude for interrupting you when I know you've got voicemail. Why didn't you just send it to voicemail? Think about that. The 70s wasn't just about bell bottoms and disco. Here are 8 things that were so much simpler in the 70s. I found this on Flashback. Coffee, for one thing. Then your coffee order really had 2 options, regular or decaf. Then it was on to decide cream or sugar. Now we can still elect to go simple, but the number of options can be headache inducing. I'll have 1 sugar-free, non-fat, no whip, split double, upside down soy milk caramel macchiato, please. Sheesh, it's its own language. How about buying stuff? Then people paid by check or cash. There really was no decision to be made. You just gave them your money. Now, would you like to use your buyer's reward card? Apply for our platinum benefits card to earn 10 points on every transaction over $1,000, redeemable on the website when you become a rewards member. You'll also earn 10% of the warranty, be eligible for purely fictional rebate, and receive hourly emails announcing irrelevant sales if you activate the card by midnight. Crazy. What about grocery shopping? Then people paid by check or cash. There really was no decision. You just gave them your money. Now you can actually shop online. You can shop, pull in, they deliver it for you. You've got a gazillion offers. There's everything from rewards cards to coupons to unlimited decisions. Have you ever looked at the pickles? How many pickles can you possibly have? Don't even get started on the frozen food aisle. How are you ever going to store all that? Crazy. Grocery shopping used to be so easy. What about a kid's birthday? Then planning your child's birthday party was so very simple. Kids came over. They ate cake. They played pin the tail on the donkey. The expectations were low. Now you need to take out a second mortgage on your home. Will you rent the roller rink? Maybe you'll rent one of those places that have inflatable slides. Can you imagine the scandal if you sent the guests home without party favors? But then all your guests are expected to bring reasonably expensive gifts for every single party they attend. So you could go broke either attending or hosting. Jeez. How about phones? We've already talked a little bit about phones, but remember then, basically a receiver and a base, no frills. And you were tethered by a cord, so you couldn't roam unless you got one of those like 150-foot cords. Remember those? They were great. Now, emails, texts, voicemails, tweets, Facebook posts, Instagram updates, all at your fingertips every waking or sleeping minute of your life. The smartphone has become some sort of electronic bodily organ. although it's probably more valuable than a kidney. And no contest versus the spleen, right? How about eating? Selection was limited. Meats, vegetables. There you got it. Now, should I go gluten-free? Maybe I should avoid carbs. But is whole wheat okay? I'll definitely need to go fat-free. But there's good fat and there's bad fat, and I've forgotten which is which. I'd like an apple, but I heard the pesticides cause cancer. I could go for some milk, but I heard they mistreat cows. Spaghetti sounds nice, but the organic brand is double the cost, and I feel guilty feeding my kids non-organic. Ah! What about dating? Then, a quick stop at the disco or the local bar, and let the chips fall where they may. It was the 70s after all. The sexual revolution did come with some fringe benefits. Now, after the disease-laden fallout of the 70s, things have taken a clinical turn. Plus, the annoying guy is likely to text you for the next 6 years. And don't forget to meticulously untag Facebook photos and update your bio. Oh, and it's very likely that the guy or girl you meet will have some serious emotional baggage. We've gotten so delicately sensitive over the years. When you finally say, to heck with it all, and hook up with the psycho, be prepared for the inevitable social media storm and pray it doesn't land on YouTube. What about TV? Then we had three channels. Remember, the VHS came much later. Now you could watch something you recorded via DVR or TiVo. And maybe there's something actually live, heaven forbid, among the unimaginable number of channels. Of course, there's always Netflix and Hulu. And there's the massive stack of DVDs that you have lying around that you'll never get to. Or you don't have anything to play them on. You've heard good things about House of Cards, but you need to catch up on the Game of Thrones. But you haven't watched the news in ages and you feel out of touch. But then something mindless like a YouTube video would go really well right now. Oops, better just play Xbox. Nostalgia has a way of erasing the daily annoyances we experience, and it leaves behind only the warm and fuzzy feelings. That's why we like to go back there. That's why we like to transport ourselves. We come across a familiar smell, a place, or a song on the radio, and we're instantly comforted by days gone by. We're transported back to a time in childhood when our world was just a few streets wide and our main concern was running out of daylight before making it home before dinner. Think of things we need to fight not to lose. The things that weren't broken. Family dinners, making time to catch up in person with our friends, meeting your neighbors and then checking in on them, quiet moments to reflect, reading, spending time outside, talking, wondering, problem solving, getting your hands dirty, celebrating life. What are some of yours? Nostalgia is like a security blanket. The good old days were a simpler time that allowed for a simpler life and therefore a simpler us. We are talking about back to the basics, the realness of retro. This is the time in the show that I just kind of like to revisit a few things. I hope you were able to take a walk back, little look back with me and some of the things that you might remember from a simpler time, whether it was your childhood or just a time when things seemed to be clicking and easier, more meaningful. I'm not sure if you're there with me, but think about the things that might be getting in the way of making those simpler times. You know, we can take that back. We can choose how we fill our schedule. We can limit our options, not allow our minds to be pulled in a gazillion directions. We can take back that power. We just have to make the choice to do it. Think about the reasons that it's important. I know I made a sort of a New Year's resolution that I was going to stop using social media or my phone for entertainment. So if I had some downtime, I was just going to think and wonder and imagine. Now, it's not a knee jerk because remember, stuff is habit forming. You sit there for a second, you know there's a text message waiting, or you haven't checked your social media, I'm sure there's a message. And you can't help yourself. You feel compelled to grab it. Same thing with email. Quickly jump over, grab it. It's got to be something super, super important. Everything is super important. When we do that, we really train our brain to continually reward itself. It's kind of like the little boy who cried wolf. You know, at one point, our brain needs to sort of shut down and relax, not have to think of those things. When things are really important, those things should be rewarded, not these little extra things all day long. If we give everything the same priority, then we're training our brain to just sort of operate on a lower level. Start thinking about that, shutting some browsers down. Stop those tabs. You know, you can have unlimited tabs. Ah, I need more RAM. I need more tabs. Turn them off. Do one thing at a time. Catch yourself. If you can catch yourself, you're really activating the frontal part of your brain. And remember, it gets distracted easily. Very, very smart area, but it does get distracted. Squirrel, right? Pull it back. Take charge. You have an opportunity to do things differently. You just have to make it happen. Rewire your brain. So I challenge you, if you long for a simpler time, make it happen. Unplug, reduce, limit, and prioritize the information you allow in your life. Nurture your relationships and build in time to make meaningful memories. You deserve it, and I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. Someone through to the